Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Your Ben Jarofsky Show for this Thursday, March 14th starts now. Today, Ben's talking top stories, Chicago politics, and so much more with 47th Ward Alderman, Matt Martin. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. Chicago Reader for everything that there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to stay updated on politics, you want to know who's up for election, you want to know about who's up for election, head to chicagoreader.com. There's so much info right there for you. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, head to chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A-V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Home Analysis Thursday, and here's why. My friend and Alderman Matt Martin is my guest today. He's standing by waiting to come on. Before he does, I'm going to do my Matt Martin impersonation of sorts, not just a literal impersonation. I'm not going to impersonate how he sounds, but I'm trying to replicate his coolness, his calmness. One of the things I really admire about Matt, he's just analytical. He's not emotional. He's not like I am. He doesn't get all excited. His face doesn't get all red. He don't get flustered. His arms don't wave in the air. He's very cool. And I've said this many times to Matt. And so Matt, I'm going to emulate you as I open with my thoughts on a fascinating analysis of Bring Chicago Home by the Civic Federation. And I read an article about it. I've read several articles about it in the newspapers. It's a very thorough analysis of the implications of Bring Chicago Home, the possible pitfalls of Bring Chicago Home. And I'll just tell folks briefly what Bring Chicago Home is. I know my listeners are all political junkies. We've been having this conversation a long time. They really don't need it. But Matt, there could be one or two who are just listening because, oh, they want to hear what Matt Martin has to say, and they don't know. Although anybody who listens to Matt Martin has to say will know what Bring Chicago Home is. But Bring Chicago Home is the question that will be on the ballot, is already on the ballot in the upcoming election, as to whether it's a binding referendum. Whether Chicago should hike the tax on the sale of expensive homes, lower the tax on the sale of less expensive homes, and then use whatever money is raised from this tax to fund housing for the poor, housing for the homeless, and affordable housing. I'm not quite sure because the specifics haven't really been just pointed out. This is one of the criticisms of the that the Civic Federation raises. Now, I should also explain that the Civic Federation, because some of my listeners may not know what that is, it's a collection of, I don't know what you call them, like good government types. I think that's a euphemistic way of saying it. Other people say do-gooders. But anyway, good government types who've dedicated themselves to budget analysis over the years, and to a large degree or not, they're not-for-profit, they're funded by corporate Chicago. So they sort of have that corporate Chicago view of things with a heavy emphasis on what is called transparency, okay? Their main criticisms of Bring Chicago Home have to do with fairness or equity, inadequate planning and oversight, and the impact it would have on taxes as a whole. Again, I'd say this is very substantive criticism and critiquing. I welcome it. Joe Ferguson, the president of Civic Federation, good job. Although Joe said something in the Sun Times today, I had to kind of smile like, come on, Joe. He said, quote, "We're not looking to influence the vote Tuesday. He's looking, quote, to influence the landscape on the accountability of what we're voting for." Again, I'm emulating Matt Martin and being calm and rational. I'll just say, come on, Joe, who are you kidding? You're not trying to influence the vote. Sure seems like you're trying to generate a no vote. I would like to, but then you're like backing off. I don't want to look like we're biased. We're just scientists. I would just like to point out, before I bring Matt on, get his thoughts on this and all other issues, I would just like to point out this something. Every single criticism or question that the Civic Federation raises about Bring Chicago Home could also be raised about the TIF program by the downtown community. They could raise those very same questions. There's issues of fairness. There's issues of inadequate planning. There's issues of the impact on taxes. And particularly, you would expect the downtown business community to be concerned about the impact on taxes because TIFs are a tax hike. As soon as you pass one, you're raising taxes on the good people of the city of Chicago, property taxes. But you don't see that kind of analysis regarding the TIF program. You don't get those hard questions regarding the TIF programs. So the question I pose today, I would love to get Matt's thoughts on this, is why? Now, I'm going to offer my theory. And Matt, you're free to completely disagree with me with what I'm about to say, because I really encourage my guests to speak their minds. And that means if you disagree with me, feel free to say so. My theory is this. My theory is that the reason why the downtown business community, the Civic Federation, et cetera, feel so free and confident to criticize Bring Chicago Home is that because it's largely intended to help the poor. And the reason they generally refrain from a serious analysis of the TIF program and have refrained from a serious analysis of the TIF program since Mayor Daley created the Chicago TIF program in the 1990s is because it's largely viewed as an instrument to benefit the well-to-do. And when it comes to economic development in the city of Chicago, when it comes to taxation in the city of Chicago, when it comes to municipal expenditures in the city of Chicago, money earmarked for the poor is generally and often viewed as a waste of money. Whereas money earmarked for the well-to-do is generally viewed as economic development and a prudent investment of our city's capital and a way to grow Chicago. And that is a bias that's baked, in my humble opinion, into absolutely every analysis and discussion we have about any program, municipal program, that I've seen for, Matt, 40-plus years I've been in this city. 40-plus years. I've not seen that inherent bias that I believe exists in every downtown newspaper, including Crane's. It's baked into it. And it's harder and harder for me to ignore it. Because I see the ramifications in the front page coverage of the White Sox Stadium and the Bears Stadium. We're going to get Matt's thoughts on those as well, which are promoted as these like great opportunities for Chicago to reinvent itself, to regenerate itself. And like, well, the issue of who pays for it and everything, we'll talk about that later. Anyway, those are my thoughts. I welcome the Civic Federation's analysis of Bring Chicago Home, and I only ask that you have the same analysis for the Bears, for the White Sox, for 78 TIF, Lincoln Yards TIF, a little late on that, missing an action on that one, but every other program, taxpayer-funded program for the well-to-do. Okay. Matt Martin, welcome back to the show. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, Ben.
All right. Your thoughts on what I just said. Love to get your thoughts. Go ahead.
I really agree with a lot of what you put out there, especially in terms of how we view things through different lenses based on our own perspectives. And so I can appreciate if someone is relatively well off and has particular experiences informed by their everyday work, everyday personal life, where maybe they are inherently less suspicious, less questioning of TIF, of some of these larger proposed stadium deals than something like Bring Chicago Home or this housing and development bond that I hope we'll be able to discuss today as well. And I think that's fine. And I think that part of my job as an elected official, and also your job as well as a journalist, is to meet people where they are, to explain, to question their presumptions, And then hopefully we come out of this with a better understanding. More often than not, I think that if we do our jobs well, there's kind of a shared understanding and a shared decision as to what those next steps are. Obviously, that's not happening across the board with Bring Chicago Home, and that's okay. And I think that it's good that the Civic Fed delved into some of these issues and asked about spending. They talked about, well, what about the need to pair this with changes to how we do zoning, especially affordable housing? All great points and things that should be referenced. I do feel, however, with regard to Bring Chicago Home, that it's not at all unique to have these special revenue funds earmarked specifically for issues like it could be transportation. It could be in this situation, housing. That is not unique at all. That happens all the time. And then when it comes to a plan, well, we already put out as supporters of the referendum, a draft ordinance that's on the website very conspicuously talking about what the eligible uses are with a focus on permanent supportive housing and the services that come through that to essentially say, hey, if you're someone who's really struggling to maintain stable housing, we want to help you provide that. We want to help you find that housing and then the wraparound services that help you stay there. So if you have mental health challenges, we want to make sure that you have access to mental health care and healthcare more generally. If maybe you need some help with childcare as you're looking to get off your feet, that's great. If, say, you're a victim of domestic violence, to get the support services that are needed there. And so I think that we definitely have talked about from the outset, homelessness is the focus here, providing permanent supportive housing and wraparound services. That's clear. And when you're talking about the accountability piece, we pass budgets annually where we take all of those different revenue funds, some of which are very general in nature, some of which have a specific use, like what's proposed here. And we figure out, okay, what did we do last year? What worked well? What didn't work well? And we have that ongoing decision-making process annually. So we can talk about how to tinker that. We can also, like the Civic Fed was talk about how we tinker with zoning more generally. But I feel that while those are important to continue talking about, in my opinion, they don't really counsel in favor or against Bring Chicago Home. They're a little bit too tangential. So let's talk about those at their own time. But right now, I think we have a terrific proposal in place.
So obviously, I knew this going in, you're a supporter of Bring Chicago Home.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And so when you talk about meeting people where they are, when you encounter opposition to Bring Chicago Home, when you're in front of a group in your ward, and just so everybody knows, Matt is the alderman of the 47th Ward. He is my alderman. Very proud of that. So when you meet opposition, when you go to like a house meeting or a block club or what have you, and you meet opposition and you feel sort of like an anger to that opposition, because a lot of times when I get into discussions about Bring Chicago Home or any initiative that's intended to help largely poor people, I pretty soon anger comes out. How do you confront it? What's your response? How do you address it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I oftentimes like to start locally by talking about what housing instability means in and around the 47th Ward and the neighbors and constituents that I've spoken with who have been in that situation, people who have walked into my office saying, I am a teenager, I'm LGBTQ, was kicked out of my home. I need somewhere to be tonight. And that's a real challenge. And we work with them to figure out how to get them housed that evening and then beyond that. I think an equally challenging issue, equally sad, is when a victim of domestic violence comes in and says, I need to get away from my abuser. I need a place, not tomorrow, not the next day, not next week, today. Oftentimes they have kids. And it's tragically been the case. Like last year, over 100 days last year, so pretty much a third of last year, there was not an immediately available shelter bed or set of beds for a family fleeing domestic violence. And so I like to just start off with like, what have our local experiences been? And then we can also talk about more visible signs of homelessness, people who have been living under LTRACs at some of our stations. So to not make it some abstract thing, we're not helping out some other group, whatever your relationship or thoughts are to that other group. Let's talk about us. Let's talk about how that can benefit our community. So if we have a shared understanding of what at least the challenges are that we're looking to address, then we can start to get into what are the best ways to address that. And then people might say, well, I agree, Matt, like homelessness is a big issue. Housing instability is a huge, huge issue in our community. But can we trust Chicago to spend these funds effectively? I say, well, let's talk about the Inspector General's recent report from last year, where they looked at how the city approaches homeless encampment residents. And saying, hey, we can get you rapid rehousing. It might not be something permanent year after year after year, but something that for the next number of months can be stable in a non-congregate setting, i.e. not inside a shelter. And so they found like with about 80% of the time after a year that those encampment members remain housed. And it's usually the case that the Inspector General's office, they're critical of our departments, right? If they're auditing a program, generally they have a sense that there are some improvements that are needed. Sometimes it's modest, sometimes it's huge. This is one of the very few times they weighed in my time in office in 5 years where they said, we don't have much to say, like other than great job, keep it up. So there's that. There's how we distributed emergency rental assistance, housing, supports during the height of the pandemic. So you can point to a lot of things that are working well, or even how we're allocating tax credits, federal tax credits, to fund some of your bigger, more affordably priced developments. We have one that is halfway being completed in our neck of the woods, Ben and Lincoln Square. So there are a lot of things that are working. Are there things that need to improve? Absolutely. But I think that we do have that demonstrated track record of doing well enough around using funds to support our unstably housed neighbors, that then we say, okay, well, I get you, Matt. We have this need. We have recent examples that are working. Well, maybe this isn't the best way to fund that. And that's what we talk about. Okay, like let's get into this. In our city, in our ward, we when the fare tax was up a few years ago, we passed that overwhelmingly. And that was something that was looking every single year, asking people who have done and are continuing to do well to just kick in a little bit more on a whole host of issues, right? Like one of the complaints around that, especially Monday morning quarterbacking, was we weren't sufficiently specific as supporters of the fare tax of where those funds were going to go. But nevertheless, that did well in the 47th Ward, that did well in the city of Chicago. What we're talking about here is not an annual revenue change in the real estate transfer tax. It's a one-time tax, you know, that's imposed any number of years. Sometimes it's going to be every 20 years or more for a particular property at the point of sale when some person, when some entity is doing really well to say, hey, we agreed, we got this big issue. And we feel that while, yes, there's always ways to do better, that we're doing generally a good job at the city of spending those important funds, but we need to expand that pie. We need to do it responsibly. And if we're asking people in organizations who are doing well to just kick in a little bit more, that's the way to move this forward. Does that like win over everybody? No, we're not 100% of the time, you know, the people in agreement, that's not going to be the case. But at least I think that's the start of a constructive dialogue, because at the end of the day, we're going to need to keep having these conversations. We're going to continue having important decisions to make well after the referendum hopefully gets passed in a few weeks.
Yeah. And to your point, you're never going to win over everybody. There will always be some people with, I don't even want to call it illegitimate or illegitimate, but an ideological opposition to the general concept of progressivity and taxation. And we saw that at play with the fare tax. So I'll draw a comparison in and out, and we will. Don't worry. We're going to get to TIFs and affordable housing. We're going to get to that and the stadiums, but let's just finish up here. I see some parallels between the opposition to the fare tax and the Bring Chicago Home, Matt, and I'll let me try to explain this as best I can. With the fare tax, there's always an effort. When you have a progressive tax, the impact of the tax will be on the well-to-do. So when you're trying to build up opposition, you're going to have to get people who will benefit from the change to vote for you. So you have to think of a way to get people to vote against their economic interests. And so in the fair tax, they just freaking lied about it in terms of like, well, it's going to tax retirement fund. They just made that up and people bought it. They went against it. It played into sort of a prejudice and a fear, a worry that people, retirees have in general, which I don't blame them because I'm almost there myself, Matt. I can tell you, you worry if unless you're a named Pritzker or a Rauner, you worry about where the money's coming in. So I get that. With this one, it's just like they shift the focus from a gazillionaire selling his house to another gazillionaire and paying more and talk about the impact on commercial real estate. All of a sudden, everybody's an expert on commercial real estate when it comes to bring Chicago home. I'm just kind of smiling. Something the Civic Federation is an expert on commercial real estate. So how do you view the criticism that's been raised lately that raising the amount, the tax on the sale of property will hurt an already suffering commercial real estate industry?
I think it's important to recognize where we've come from over the past several years, and especially with regard to the pandemic and the ways in which that disrupted in such a significant way where people work. Virtual remote work in not all jobs, to be clear, but many jobs was essentially a necessity for a period of time. And that meant that you weren't going downtown. You weren't using these larger office buildings nearly as much. And that since then that's changed. And I think that we're starting to see that pick up a little bit more. But look, like things will continue to change and evolve. We've also in the same breath heard from, I think, many of those people or organizations who are questioning who are very supportive of the city looking to redevelop particular sites, sometimes asking for city funds in the form of TIF along LaSalle Street. I think that's like the best example to say you've got a lot of the older buildings. So not West Loop, not closer to Michigan Ave, some of your older legacy buildings where they say, hey, like maybe these are C-class buildings, not your A flagship buildings that will always be doing okay. Not your B buildings that are, doing all right, but it's been better. Your C-class building, saying there's an outstanding question of, do we tear these down? Do we do an adaptive reuse, essentially like remaking the inside? And in a lot of situations, you've had people in the business community saying, let's redevelop and have more of that be residential or at least other types of use as opposed to just an office space. Those are good and important conversations to have. We're having those. I know many of my downtown colleagues have been spearheading that. I believe the mayor's office recently announced that they were broadly supportive of moving forward with planning that had been underway under the Lightfoot administration. So these things, they're dynamic. It's not static. And so I do feel that over the next year or two, we'll continue to have a kind of dust settling in terms of how some of these larger buildings and spaces are being used downtown. But just like, during the Great Recession, we had certain revenue streams that were lower. You have to take a longer view of this. And so I think that if we have a little bit less revenue coming from the downtown area over the next year or two after Bring Chicago Home passes, that's okay. But the city will continue to be very mindful of how we support all of our communities, including downtown. So let's acknowledge that, but also know that not all of these buildings are selling annually anyway. So if you're again talking about like how often is this kicking in, I think it's happening less often than a lot of people think, particularly for these downtown buildings, and that there are lots of ways in which government is considering or already decided we can continue to support our downtown business district, and that it's not zero sum. It's not you either support or you're against. And if you're supporting Bring Chicago Home, you're against. I think that's a false choice.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And before we leave this one, that I'm just telling you right now, opponents of Bring Chicago Home, that is the most bogus opposition I've heard since the fair tax brought on that lady who lived in the suburbs that you're going to tax your retirement. Matt, I've lived in Chicago long enough to go through booms and busts in the downtown real estate. I've read so many crane stories when a building would sell for some unbelievable amount of money. Cranes, which is a business publication. So these are their people. Would be like popping champagne. Like, oh my God, this like Billy Bob's skyscraper in the South Loop just sold for $150 million more than he bought it for. Like, we should all be happy by that, you know? Well, I'm saying, okay, Billy Bob, kick in a little more. All right. I mean, you're making that money. Now there's a little, it's like you pointed out, post COVID. We don't know. There's a tremendous uncertainty in the commercial real estate. You pointed it out. I mean, are people going to go back to offices? Are they going to remain at home? So Chicago didn't see this. Nobody saw it coming, you know? And I mean, you could see that with Lincoln Yards. It was so much of it was contingent on continued boom in the commercial real estate market. And all of a sudden now they're like, what do we do? You know, they're trying to figure it out. But I don't believe, Matt, one building will not be sold, if that makes sense, because of this tax. In other words, if Billy Bob can sell his building to Sally's too, and it's a good deal for both of them, they're going to make it. And they'll just shuffle this tax. You know, they'll cut that deal among themselves. They'll figure out how to appropriate the sale to adjust to the tax, if you understand what I just said. So that's my take. It's like, man, you guys cooked this thing up. Just say it. You don't like to pay taxes. All right, Matt, enough ranting and railing for me. Let's get into the TIF and affordable housing program. This is Geekland, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize going into this, but there's this is like mother's milk to me. So I'll start us going with a brief explanation, and then you take it from there. Mayor Johnson has proposed, the real specifics of the plan have not been released yet, but has proposed in a general way to allow certain TIF districts. He has not specified which ones. So that is the key detail missing from this. That is a huge detail missing from this. But he is he's proposing to allow certain TIF districts to retire over the next 6 years. And then when the money is no longer being, the property tax dollars are no longer being diverted to TIF bank accounts controlled by the city, which is what happens now, they will flow in to the coffers of the various taxing agencies, the school, the city, the park district, et cetera, and will be more money to spend, which is good. And the mayor is proposing to dedicate a chunk of that money that they will now have flowing into the city to pay back money they will borrow to build affordable housing. And so it's a very complicated thing, Matt, for folks to understand. You got to understand how TIFs work. You got to understand the difference between money flowing into a TIF bank account and money flowing into the Chicago public schools. You got to understand financing costs on when you borrow money as opposed to when you just spend the money and there are no financing costs. You got to do this without the specificities of the program. So Chicago, Matt, no, they haven't told us which TIF district are going to close. You have to do this with the mayor's cheerleaders going, what a great program, yeah. And his detractors saying, this is terrible. And you really have no basis to make either proclamation, Matt, because they haven't given us the specifics. So this is my first take of this. Your thoughts, agree, disagree, take it away.
I think that this has the potential to be really transformative over the next several years. But there are still outstanding questions and nothing has been, we haven't even had a hearing on it, much less pass something. So there's plenty of opportunity to have the public, to have the press, to have older people ask those questions and if necessary, insist that changes be made before a vote be taken. But to be clear, like this is, $1.25 billion that we're looking to borrow and to have approximately over the next 5 years equal chunks of $250 million spent in each of those years. So there's been some, certainly some information shared by the mayor's office, as there should be, alongside an introduction of the ordinance to say, well, you know, it's going to be $1.25 billion. spent over a five-year period, that half of the money will go towards the Department of Housing to do things like build new and preserve existing affordable rental homes, to enhance home ownership, to do more with SRO preservation, so your single room occupancy buildings. And then the other half would be administered by the Department of Planning and Development in some similar but still distinct ways. So community development grants that could have a housing component, but oftentimes don't have a housing component. And it can help with things like property acquisition, site preparation, including demolition. So like weedsy stuff, but still some of those things where you're like, hey, here's a stretch that just looks a little out of keeping. I love the block on either side, but this one you've got like maybe, think about Western in our neck of the woods, Ben, like a used car lot, a formal rental car lot, maybe a single story insurance building where you're like, hey, this is flanked on either side by some four or five story buildings, some of which are mixed use with some great dynamic commercial on that first floor. And so thinking about how do we activate these spaces? So, you know, that's what DPD is looking at, as well as expanding supports for small businesses. So they've said, here's at a high level what we want to spend it on. Here's a dollar range, which is good. And then that gives the opportunity to say, hey, well, how about we do more here, less here? I want you to talk more specifically about home ownership. What communities are we going to be focused on? What types of incentives are we going to provide? Are we means testing them? Let's look into that. So I think that there's a lot that's already out there. But at the end of the day, I think one of the biggest selling points of this for me as a concept is the money that goes into TIFs, and it's huge amounts of money, as you talked about, it can only be spent within those TIF districts. So first, you know, you take it that way. Not every single a block is in a TIF. And the TIFs that are doing best are in the areas that are doing best, with people and businesses who have and continue to do quite well. So that point around when Mayor Washington in the mid-80s started up this TIF program, the idea was, how do we get, without federal assistance, because it was Reagan at the time, without state assistance, I think we probably had a Republican governor at that time, how do we get the city using city funds to really jumpstart divestment in those blighted areas, right? That was the idea. It was very laudable. It's since taken on this role where it's just that slush fund too often to help fund whatever project. And so to be able to break down those barriers and say, look, this isn't going to just stay within a TIF. We're going to make sure that everybody across the city has a availability to use this. And as my colleague Maria Haddon has mentioned, some of her areas don't have a TIF. Some of them in Rogers Park have a TIF that's not performing well. Then what is she going to do if some of these projects, especially these more ambitious projects, whether there's great commercial, there's great affordable housing components that only happens right now with TIF, like that project in Lincoln Square, that affordable mixed use, 100% affordable housing project, that doesn't happen without TIF. So, you know, we were transparent about that as an office to say, when we use TIF, we're going to tell you about it. It's for infrastructure improvements along our major streets. It's for park district improvements so that kids can go inside during a hot summer day and have air conditioning, or it's to build affordable housing. You know, that's where we focused it. But I also recognize that we've been blessed to have some well-performing TIFs. Several of them are going to expire. I think that's good. And to be able to spread that benefit all across the city, and maybe even in a part of 47 that doesn't fall within a TIF but still might need it, that's good. That's important. So just like our conversation about Bring Chicago Home, I think there's a lot to agree with here, but let's continue to do our work.
Yeah, let's get some specifics. I just want to push back on just one thing you said, that TIF district, the TIF money can only spend in the TIF district. That's not, I know you know this, but that's not completely true, ladies and gentlemen. The TIF law is written with so many loopholes that there's something called porting,
yep,
which means you can move TIF dollars from one TIF district to another TIF district, and you can even move TIF dollars to an area that's not within a TIF district and spend it if it's for a public good. And I suspect, Matt, none of the details have emerged yet, that if the Bears push ahead with their lakefront site, then invariably they will seek TIF funding for that site. Follow me on this. Because it will be for park improvement. So just like Mayor Daley used TIF dollars from the Central Loop TIF to fund Millennia Park, even though Millennia Park is not in a TIF district, but they moved that money into just for Millennia Park because they felt capable of doing that, was for public improvement. And so there's so many loopholes in the, I call them crater holes or loop craters, whatever you want to call it, in the TIF law. So yes, in principle, it's only supposed to be spent within the district. But in practice in Chicago, it is, as you said, a slush fund. It's moved around all over wherever there's a need for it. And that is why I think the first question that has to be asked about this program, this proposal, it's which TIF districts are you closing?
That's, I think, such an important question to get an answer to and get that locked in. Because if part of what the proposal from the city is amounts to, look, we are going to close several dozen TIF districts, and that's how we fund this bond, and the principal and the interest without raising property taxes is because we are going to close these districts, then yes, we absolutely need to lock those in, because what we don't want to do is to leave for a future generation or, neighbors as well as people who work in government to say, well, yeah, we didn't really specify. And then after the fact, it became challenging to close it. And then we have this huge bill that comes due every year. That's not responsible. So we certainly, to your point, need to learn our lessons from prior bad decisions that the city has made. And part of it is absolutely identifying which district. We've got to be transparent and know that there might be some fights. But at the end of the day, one of the things I will say, because you brought up a good point about porting and a lot of the exceptions around TIF, I will say the Lightfoot administration did a good job of surplusing TIFs to say, we're not going to let this money languish for years or maybe even a decade if we don't have a plan that we can point to, a project that is far enough along. We're going to surplus that. We're going to return that money back to the taxing districts so the schools get some more to help maybe offset a budget deficit. Yeah. Same thing with the Park District and, of course, the city. So we did that. Almost every year was a new record in terms of surplusing. So things did get better, and credit to Mayor Lightfoot and her team for recognizing that. But I think that this is the next step to say there's some places that just don't need that. And let's be transparent.
Listen, man, the cynical side of me says make the whole city a TIF, since people are so ignorant about the TIF program and how it impacts their taxes. And they're not aware that it raises their taxes. I don't believe you were in office when Lincoln Yards was proposed. There was never a discussion ever about the property tax impact of Lincoln Yards. I submit to you that if it had been a program to generate money for poor people, that would have been scrutinized by every single budget watcher in the city of Chicago. How much money will this add to the average property taxpayer? Nobody did that when it came to the TIF, the Lincoln Yard TIF. So my proposal has always been turn the entire city into a TIF. People won't realize they're spending the extra money, and they could do what Lori Lightfoot did. Just use that money that the people don't realize they're paying to pay off the obligations that the city has every day. People think I'm being cynical, and I'm not, and when I say that, but I'm serious. Let's do it. I mean, if you're not going to have an honest discussion, Matt, if you're not going to like recognize your biases in the discussion, and you pretend like there's a tax liability in one instance and not a tax liability in another instance, then hell with it. Let's just, if the public's going to be ignorant and susceptible to manipulation because of its ignorance, let the good times fly, baby, and just turn the whole city into a TIF. Okay, that's my modest proposal. I will not ask you to appropriate deal with that, because I don't think any elected official can handle that one. All right. So we'll be watching this one. Like Matt said, a lot of details still to emerge. Not even a hearing on this one yet. But as I understand it, it was after it was brought to the council, it was sent to rules, it was brought out of rules, and now which committee is going to, it's going to be
finance. That's right.
That was hilarious. They kicked it to rules. What a city. So we'll be watching that. We'll probably bring you on to talk about it. Anything you want to add to that before I move on to the Bear stadiums?
You know, the one thing I would say is that we've done a good job in my brief time in office. I'm in my fifth year of taking a citywide approach to certain development issues with limited use of funds. So I'm thinking specifically about federal tax credits that we get, and our former housing commissioner, Marisa Navarro, whose praises I can't sing loudly enough, did a great job of putting out this QAP, its Qualified Allocation Plan, which is a lot of verbiage to just say, what is our plan for how we are distributing these important funding mechanisms, these tax credits, without which a lot of our more affordable developments wouldn't happen. And so if people are saying, well, can we really trust the city to take funds from this bond and allocate them equitably across the city without concern for things like TIF? Look no further than that. There are projects in Bronzeville that I was happy to support. Obviously, our Lincoln Square one, a little bit west in Albany Park, a lot of great examples. So we do have increasingly muscle memory of figuring out how do we allocate these sorely needed funds to areas that need them that align with our values. So we have been doing some good work, but more is done, and I'm glad that this is getting consideration.
Yeah, and I want to second one thing you said. I think Lori Lightfoot was a great improvement over Rahm Emanuel and Mayor Daley in the TIF program. No question. Absolutely. I can't let that moment pass. As Mr. TIF in Chicago, I got to say. It's a slow evolution, Matt, but it was improvement in my humble opinion. Mayor Rahm dropping those two TIFs on the city council in his last meeting, all those outgoing aldermen voting for it was a disgrace. And to her credit, Lori Lightfoot didn't try anything like that. So, all right. Now here we are in the Brandon Johnson administration, and we have not one but two proposals to hand over money to fabulously wealthy people to build sports arenas or sports stadiums. One with the Bears, which is right now, who knows where it'll end up being if they don't go back to Arlington Heights. But right now it would be just south of Soldier Field along the lakefront. And the other with the White Sox in the 78, which is along the banks of the Chicago River, just south of Roosevelt Road. Your general thoughts before we get into specifics about these proposals.
As much as I can appreciate a very slick design, because it's good to be able to see like beyond numbers, beyond pandering, like what are we talking about? What could something look like? There's no substitute for that. And I appreciate that. At the end of the day, you have to ask like, well, what are you asking for specifically from the city? And especially what sort of financial assistance. That's just what it comes down to. Because I think about things, I like you, am a huge sports fan, especially NBA basketball. And the trend that the NBA has been taking, as you know better than I, is to have like these billionaires increasingly purchase these teams. It's almost like a vanity project, right? And is it like, do they make money? Yeah, sure. But it's a vanity project at bottom. And at the end of the day, I think of like a stewardship of a professional team as a privilege. It's not something that you should be in just to make a lot of money. Just think about like all the ways in which it can bring us together. And a city as large and complicated as Chicago, with as many problems as we have, to just have things that like you're going to feel good about, even if you feel good about it while you're feeling badly about it, is been the case with too many of our teams recently. But I just view it in that way to say, we already, interestingly enough, with both of those teams, significant funds have been expended over the last several decades, and now it's a redo. And I get that neither of those ownership groups are like the Ricketts, and the Cubs and Wrigley Field is not like these other two areas, but you know, that was a big knockdown, drag out fight in terms of how those improvements to Wrigley Field and the surrounding area were going to go. And my recollection is that the city did not kick in much, if any, funds. I mean, you could say, okay, are there more security personnel? Did we improve some infrastructure, sidewalks? And like, you know, maybe there are some things along the margin. So I don't want to say out of hand, like, not a single, like, public cent went towards those projects, but that was pushed by that team. And so I just want to know at the end of the day, especially as an older person, what's the ask going to be? Because like, do we want dynamic areas, especially I think the trend is to have more development, housing and commercial around these areas so that you have these true nodes of activity more ways than one. Absolutely. I love that in a vacuum, but what are you asking for to make that happen? We're not here just to bankroll, you know, your profits, especially when they come at the expense of a really intriguing and engaging team. So appreciate, you know, the vision. What are you asking for? Because I think we're talking about two recent examples where we've been burned.
Absolutely. Great riff. And I got to tell you, to your point about the shot in the arm that a sports team can give it with City, you notice, man, I'm a diehard sports fan, as you pointed out. I wear my Bulls hat proudly. I'm in a group of friends. We own season tickets to the Bulls. It's our vanity project, okay? It's our vanity. Like, Reinsdorf owns the team. I own the season tickets. It's our vanity thing. Last night, DeMar DeRozan hit a shot at the end of regulation in a back and forth, just great nail biter of a game with the Indiana Pacers to send in overtime. I can't believe I've watched it a million times, Matt. I still can't believe he hit that shot. The Bulls went on to win in overtime. So many of my friends were texting each other. Even my friend Muiz, I'll just throw him out there, he was the biggest front runner Fairweather fan I've ever seen. Even he was Mr. Front Runner himself. Even he was excited by that shot. I don't, and I truly appreciate the benefit that a sports team can have for an enormously diverse city of Chicago where people are always at each other's throats. And it's like one thing we can agree on, you know what I'm saying? So I hear you 100%. There is a value to having that team here. I feel as though that value is often manipulated. Those passions that people like me have. I think you're more of a Lakers fan, aren't you? You're not really a Bulls fan, are you?
I like the Bulls. I follow them more than any other team. I grew up in Southern Arizona. Yeah. And so initially it was the Suns and then the Spurs. Like, there was a very brief period of my time in life where I was very tall and I loved basketball. And I thought, hey, I'm going to be an NBA center. And so like the Spurs with David Robinson and Tim Duncan, I was following them, but for as long as I've lived in the Chicago area, it's been the Bulls for me.
Okay, that's cool. That's just what you know. At least 10% of Chicago is a front runner. So you don't have to worry about saying you're another team. Right now, as we speak, 10% of this city is whoever is in first place in the NBA, that's who they're for. So you don't have to worry about alienating voters. What I'm saying is I feel they manipulate those feelings. You know what I'm saying? It's like they take advantage of our love for those uniforms, for those jerseys, for those names, Peyton, Sayers, Butkus. You get what I'm saying? They have such resonance for old timers like me. You know, I get teary eyed looking at Walter Payton videos over and over again. Michael Jeffrey Jordan winning six for Chicago. You know, and so I feel like they manipulate us. You know what I'm saying? And that irritates the hell out of me, Matt. I got to tell you. So Andy Shaw, I don't know if you saw his essay. I got to give him credit. Old Andy from, shout out Andy. You and I don't agree with everything when it comes to public spending, that's for sure, for the BGA. He had an essay in today's Sun Times where he was admitting he's good friends with Jerry Reinsdorf, but he goes, I'm against this plan. And Jerry, you should spend it. You should pay for it yourself. And I appreciate that attitude. I'm starting to sense, maybe, correct me if I'm wrong here, that maybe the tide is changing a little bit here, that there's more of an opposition to giving over money to the Bears and the White Sox than it has been the case in the past. What do you think about that?
I agree completely. I think that it's, to the extent it was ever the case, it's no longer the case that we're just going to write a blank check. It's like, oh yeah, anything. You all have been so good to us. We can't afford to have you leave. Like, just the simple thought, the prospect of that, you know, results in shudders going up and down our spines. I do think we're past that point, especially with like both of these examples, right? You have the Bears Stadium, which was flawed from the jump, just, you know, looks terrible, but was recent enough to say, hey, we just did this. We're still paying off the debt. and you're saying it's just not profitable enough. Not like, can football still be played there? It absolutely can. It's just not profitable for you. Like there are other, you know, there are certain events that they feel they are missing out on that are revenue generators. Fine, I get that. But like, read the room, understand what you're coming out of. And then, you know, the famous Mike Madigan situation, rolling the clock back with the White Sox. And I get that that's coming up, but it's just like, is given all our challenges, right? Like fiscally, we're in a much different place right now. We're really challenged with pensions. We've got public safety, affordable housing, environmental issues, transportation issues, the list goes on. And like, this is where we really want to invest. Like that small amount of resources that is a bit discretionary, I just really struggle to see. Like you said, a lot of people saying, yeah, whatever you need, we'll do it. Like, let's see what the ask is, right? Like, I don't think that it's in the spirit of being constructive to just say no to anything. Let's see what the actual ask is. Mm-hmm. But I come in very, very suspicious, very questioning. I mean, I think that's also important to foreground too, so that someone doesn't waste our collective time by coming in with this pie in the sky idea that you could tell them like is DOA right from the jump.
Well, I got to tell you, there is a theory of negotiation, not that I employ it. And by the way, I'm a terrible negotiator. There is a theory of negotiation that says just start off with a rejection and see where that takes. In other words, so the White Sox say, we're seeking this. And then you go, no, absolutely not. There is a theory that's where you start a negotiation. You follow what I'm saying, Matt?
Yeah.
I've never seen any city do that in a negotiation with a sports stadium, but there is that theory of, you know.
I would just say like this, it's a lot of time and resources to put in to what is a very clear no, especially when time is short for us in office. You know, we're not for the most part doing this for many, many years or decades. So can you, like, as applied to our situation, afford to spend 2 years on something that people are going to dismiss out of hand? I struggle with that one as applied here, but we'll see. Maybe that's the tack they take.
Well, I don't blame Mayor Johnson for the positions he's taken in these. The Sun-Times had an excellent editorial, in my humble opinion, about the Bears' proposal. And in the end, they kind of chided Brandon Johnson for being open-minded about it. And I had a laugh when I read that. It's so ironic coming from a downtown editorial. Imagine if he had just said, no, this is ridiculous. We can't afford this. We can't even we have, you know what pension obligations I got? That casino's not raising nearly enough money to pay off the police pensions if he'd said that. Imagine what the Tribune would have done to him, what Cranes would have done to him, what Paul Vallis would have done to him. Just line them up. You know what I'm saying? And so as the mayor of Chicago, I understand he's no longer like, you know, the lefty progressive friend of the Ben Jarofsky show. He has a bigger universe he has to deal with, Matt. So I understand him saying, well, we're open-minded. Do the Bears really matter in the city of Chicago? You know the rhetoric he's employing, and that's what a mayor should do, in my humble opinion. So I'm not giving him a hard time for saying that. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel that if you were the mayor, it would be a very similar thing. It would be like, okay, let's see what the proposal is. Let's calm down, everybody, you know, right? Am I correct about that?
Look, I also look at where we're coming from, right? You had a situation where all indications were there was a real toxic relationship between the prior administration and the Bears. So part of it's level setting, right? To be able to say, hey, there were people like Mayor Lightfoot caught criticism for being very cool in her reception of the Bears pitch. Things kind of changed in the 11th hour right before the election. So to your point, it's kind of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. But at the end of the day, I think that it's important for us to signal that on a whole host of issues, we're open minded. Because you never want someone coming in saying, they're never going to hear me out. Like, that's not our job. Our job is to like represent a very big, broad and diverse city, but also in respect of our time, because our time is one of our most valuable resources as elected officials, to be transparent, to say, look, like, I'm not saying no out of hand, but just know here are our constraints so that people don't go in there flying blind, because then they're frustrated and then we've wasted a bunch of everybody's time.
All right. I'm going to switch to something, a subject that's really hard for me to talk about because it's so painful. And I have absolutely, I got to admit, Matt, I don't know. I don't have a solution. My son times today, and I get the old, I'm old fashioned. So I get the newspaper itself, and I'm turning the pages right now. And it's just one horrific crime story after another. Yeah. Chicago man gets 27 years for attack on ATF agents. Horrifying 24 hours in Chicago. 9 killed, most by shootings across city during shockingly violent late winter stretch. And then screaming, which is about a shooting that happened in the 40th Ward just outside.
Yeah.
Just very close to your ward. Right down the street. There's just charges filed an attack on a woman who was targeted twice by same armed robberies. I'm just at loss. We talk about crime in this show a lot. I've spent a lot of time on it, different strategies, different thoughts, criminal justice issues, prosecution issues, et cetera. And so for Cook County State's attorney raise, police oversight, all that kinds of thing. Do you have any, like, general thoughts about what Chicago can do to lower the amount of crime in this city?
If you're Chicagoan and this stuff doesn't pain you, even if it doesn't happen in your backyard, there's something a little off. I remember probably my most challenging day in office was, say, a year and a half ago or so. We had a double homicide. In the northern part of our community, not too far away from where that awful domestic violence death happened. And it was two teenage brothers who were shot and killed late in the evening. And to get word about that, go talk with the parents the next day. I can't really put into words how hard that is. I thought instantly about that when I heard about the homicide in Andre's ward, dealing with children. We don't have words for that. And yeah, I can tick off a long list of things that are in the queue that, we're doing. And I think that's important so that people know there is actually stuff that's being done. I think that it's important to acknowledge, despite the challenges yesterday, that we're moving in a more positive direction in terms of year over the year, over the last several years, fewer shootings, fewer homicides. But then I look at that and I say, well, is it at the pace that some other peer cities are seeing? No, it's much too slow. Are still the overall numbers way too big? Even if someone says, well, 1992, it was worse. Yeah, it was, but that doesn't mean that's okay. That we don't live in statistics. We don't say, well, I feel 18% safer because there are 18% fewer shootings. And so what I think it's so incredibly important for all of us to do, not just elected officials, not just people in government, but all across the city, is to think about, like, how can we better swing for the fences on this issue? Because if safety is the biggest short-term challenge facing Chicago, and because of Citizen App and Nextdoor and the internet, like, we're just more aware of what's happening on our block, the block next to us, the neighborhood next to us than ever before, is my sense. We're more plugged in. And so, like, I think we just have to recognize that, with all of those homicides that you just ticked off, that it can't just be, well, we've got this little program, this little pilot here and a little pilot there. At the end of the day, we just gotta figure out what's working well. And that's why pilots are important, but you can't pilot an issue to death and to say, okay, you got violence prevention programming where you're going out doing street outreach, offering free therapy, paid job training for a specific job that has been set aside for you that's going to pay a livable wage that oftentimes has you move up and have some career advancement. We know that works. Like, we have all the data from all the pilots. So, like, how much, like Arne Duncan and others, they put out some numbers, how much it would cost. And I sure would love to see us as a city within and outside of government approach that issue with the same vigor that we do around these issues around finances, because it's just like we can't afford not to do a better job there. So I think that's like probably the big, from what I can tell, the most helpful thing that we can do point in time. We're already on that path, but it's just, we have to skyrocket that. And then from there, there are different issues. I think domestic violence, as we saw tragically in the 40th Ward, doesn't get the sort of attention that's needed. Like year over year, we've just, like those funds have been flat. We need to ramp that up hugely. And I think another big thing we need to do is to really fundamentally rejigger our 911 system. Because so often people say, I got an issue big or small, I'm calling 911 and I'm going to expect, and they should expect a timely response. And the way that we've structured it, it's from an officer. And I just think if we're going to say we're hyper-focused on robberies, burglaries, carjackings, shootings, and homicides, that we need to rejigger our 911 system that reflects that. So that if you see, like, there's a business at 10 a.m. that's playing music a little too loudly, or there's a vehicle that's been abandoned, someone from the city absolutely needs to respond to that. But let's figure out how to allocate all of those resources more effectively within and outside of the department. So at the end of the day, we're not spending $280 million on overtime that was just reported in TTW. Yeah. Like, you know, is overtime going to be needed from time to time? Sure, I get that. We're heading into a very busy summer, especially with the DNC. That's really going to stretch our resources. But at the end of the day, I can't imagine a scenario. I will dismiss out of hand the idea that we needed to spend $280 million on overtime last year. That's just, that to me screams we are not using our resources effectively. And it's not just within the department. Like, there's money that could have been going towards those violence prevention organizations, towards addressing domestic violence in a better way. So, you know, that's my perspective, that, to be clear, is informed by my work in and around 47. So let's also make sure we're carving out time for people who live in other communities who have different ideas. But at the end of the day, like, let's agree we got to swing for the fences on issues around violence.
Yeah, I'm with you. And pretty much everything you said, and when you were doing that, I just flashed onto something completely different. My recent experience, which I won't go into detail, but with my, I had a gout attack. It was so painful. You don't want to have gout, Matt. Never get gout. I'm like, just listen to me, okay? And I ended up going to an emergency room to get painkillers. That was the only way I could get them. I won't bore you with all the details, but as I was, my wife and I were sitting in that emergency room, And the emergency room doctor was honest. He was very honest. He goes, this is why you have to do it. There's no other way you're going to get these painkillers that you're going to need to deal with this. I'm like, do you agree with me? This is insane that I am here in an emergency room. And the unbelievable costs that will be generated by this visit for something that could have been solved with a 15-minute visit to a clinic, you know? And he goes, what do you want? You know what I mean? It was like, he's the emergency room doctor. He's not Bernie Sanders. He can't save the system. But to me, when you were going on that riff, I was like, yes, there's something really wrong about the way we allocate the police. You get what I mean? And the money around the police, that they're so many different things they're doing. I'm not even sure what their top function is anymore, Matt. And, yeah, I sometimes wish we could just take a deep breath and like calmly analyze it and then make the changes. But I don't think Chicago does that like that, Matt. You know what I'm saying? That's just not a Chicago thing, you know?
No, I mean, look, like we can, Chicago, it's, there's a lot more flair. There's a lot more personality, things that are rip roaring, fly by the seat of your pants, which I get that's part of what makes things fun in this position, but it's also what makes things really challenging. So I think we can find a way to have some of those fun elements stay fun in other areas, but with things as important as public safety, acknowledge that just like how we start up the conversation around Bring Chicago Home, we're not going to be in 100% agreement about that, and that's fine. But I do think that there has to be a shared recognition that what we're doing in public safety, big picture, isn't ideal and couldn't be improved. And let's not nibble around the edges. It's not solely the police department's job to ensure public safety. We have lots of other public safety stakeholders within government and outside of government. So let's structure and fund things in a way that reflects that.
Well put. All right, Matt, I'm going to let you go back to your day. Thank you very much for taking time out to talk to me. It's always fun. And I promise, I pledge to you and my listeners, I'm not going to let so much time lapse between visits. I know I said that the last time, and then I let like a year go by. Not this time, all right? So I'm going to bring you back. I'm going to be reaching out to you. Word of warning in about 2 months. Be ready.
Always love talking with you, Ben. Thanks so much.
All right, that's Matt Martin. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. I'm sure Matt agrees with me when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, all Ben's previous shows, bonus interviews, columns, all that and so much more is all available for you at chicagoreader.com. You can follow Ben on Instagram, like his reels, at Benny J Show. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.